Hello and welcome to Fent Show, conversations with entrepreneurs, where they share their challenges and lessons learned through their journey to earning a living doing what they love. I'm Diana Lopez, and welcome. Hello, hello, and welcome to Fent Show. My name is Diana Lopez, and I'm very excited today because I have an amazing guest, Laura Peterson from Copy the Pups.
Laura,
hi, aka Laptop Laura, is a tall math and psychology teacher turned persuasive writing expert and Amazon best-selling book launch strategist, a podcaster, speaker, number one international best-selling author and course creator, loves helping entrepreneurs step into the light and grow their brand and their businesses. Hello, Laura. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being here from San Diego, right?
Yes. There? Okay. Yes, yes, yes.
In Tijuana, so we're just...
Neighbors!
Yeah.
Vecinos.
Vecinos. And I'm so excited to have you. I've, you know, followed your work. I've met you in WeWork in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing that you help other entrepreneurs shine. So kudos.
Yeah.
But before talking about your projects, I have a type of icebreaker question.
Sure.
What was the first thing that you bought with your own hard-earned money?
Oh, my goodness. Like when I was a kid?
Yeah, your first paycheck.
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know.
Or the thing that comes to mind that you're like, oh.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, at least like if it were a bit of a bigger expenditure, maybe not the first very thing, but the first thing that was meaningful to me mm-hmm. was probably a plane ticket to go travel abroad, because I'm obsessed with international travel. And that was a big reason that I became an entrepreneur. And
that makes two of us.
Yeah. So I'm sure it was a flight somewhere far away.
Do you know where? Do you remember where?
Oh, let me think here. So, well, I studied abroad in Germany for a year in college. But I think that my parents helped fund that. So I won't count that one. Thanks to them. Very lucky for that. But after that, I think, let's see, the first big trip I did on my own, it may have been to study Spanish in Mexico. So just mm-hmm. south of Cancun, so in Playa del Carmen. Yeah. I remember I went out there. This is in 2008, so it might have been something before that. But I remember in around 2008, I flew down to Playa del Carmen and I studied Spanish for about 3 or 4 weeks. I lived with a host family. And then I had 3 more weeks and I backpacked through Belize, Guatemala, and back into Mexico. And I was a teacher at that time, so I wasn't an entrepreneur yet. But I became a high school teacher because I wanted more time off than a normal 9-to-5 would allow so that mm-hmm. I could travel.
Wow. Talk about pampering yourself. That's amazing.
But I definitely backpacked. Like I was like low budget backpacker, you know, eating as cheaply as I could. But I loved every second of it.
Just tortillas and beans.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I got addicted to cilantro and lime on this trip. I was like, where has this been all my life? I put it on everything now.
Love it. Okay, well, for those that don't know you, tell us a little bit more about yourself. When you attend events and people ask you, what do you do? How do you respond?
Well, my gut reaction at first is I try to avoid talking about business at first if I can, because mm-hmm. I feel like we tend to prefer to do business with friends or people that we really trust already. So I love to just talk with someone and see if we just connect as people first before being like, I do this and I do that. Because sometimes I feel like psychologically, I know that if I ask that first, if I'm like, oh, what do you do? And then they tell me that they're like doing something really crazy, amazing. Then I start feeling a little intimidated. I'm like, start questioning. Oh my gosh. Like, am I doing enough? Like, I don't know. So I start psychologically getting in my own head. And then vice versa, if I say something and I feel like I'm bragging, if I like go too big with it, I don't know. Like I sometimes just like to get to know people as people before going into business. But long story short, if I really had to introduce what I do as an entrepreneur, then I would say that I specialize in helping entrepreneurs and especially ones with podcasts mm-hmm. to become author experts and leverage the power of the authority and expert status that comes with being a published author to grow everything that they want in their business.
I love that. And mostly I love your how you answer this question. I think it's key what you mentioned. You only do business with people you trust. Yeah. And when you go networking, it's important to just, you know, make a connection instead of and just being like, hey, what do you like to do? Instead of, you know, what do you do for fun? Where are you from?
Yeah.
And instead of just being, you know, the first thing you'd say is like, oh, what do you do? It's like, that comes after. And I really enjoy those conversations when you're talking about like movies or just the beach. And then after like 15 minutes, you're like, oh, by the way, what do you do?
Exactly. And then you're like talking like friends more.
I completely agree. So I love that you answered the question the way you answered it. It's kind of a trick question.
Yeah, I passed the test.
You did. So before you leaped into becoming an entrepreneur, was there a moment where, you know, you hesitated and that you were just 100% sure you were not going to take the leap? Can you share with us that precise moment?
So when I came back from studying abroad in Germany, that was my junior year of college. After I graduated, I tried a bunch of different businesses and nothing worked. So I could totally tell you examples of things that totally failed and were like sort of embarrassing, but you got to try, right? Yeah. So I ran back to what I knew best, which was education, because I was a nerd in school and I've always been good at understanding where other people are not understanding. So I can fill in the gaps and explain it to them in a way that makes them not feel dumb. So I've just always had that sort of ability to tutor and teach. So I ran back to education and I ended up doing a master's and teaching high school for about 5 years. And I did love it. And I traveled all over the place. Every time there was a break, I left and just went traveling the world. But after about 5 years, so kind of going into my fifth year, I just felt like I don't belong here. The other teachers were amazing, hardworking, but I just felt different. Like I just felt like a black sheep. Like I don't belong here. I don't belong living in one place my whole life. I don't belong having just one job my entire life. And I definitely don't belong in having like a boss and rules and regulations that I don't necessarily agree with, but I can't change. So I just knew that there was some that I had to pursue this entrepreneurship, even though past stuff had failed in the years past. And I do remember starting to tell people about halfway through, this is my last year, I'm leaving. And they were like, oh, what are you going to do after? And I'm like, well, I'm going to start a business. And they're like, what is it? And I'm like, I don't know yet. And they're like, how can you do that? Aren't you scared? And I was like, I just feel like I would suffocate if I stayed. Like, I have to figure it out. Like, I have to burn the bridges or burn the ships, if you know that analogy, like burn the ship. So there's no retreat. We have to move forward. And so when I did that, even though I didn't have a clear path, I just took one step after the next and things started to come together.
I love that. And I think that when you started to, you know, like you said, burn those bridges and the ships, like that was the moment when you were decisive, right?
Yeah.
Because at first it was a thought and then you start sharing it, but then you actually just did it. You're like, okay, this is that moment.
Yeah. And making it public is a big deal, because if you always keep it in your head, it's easy for you to kind of go back on your own promise to yourself. Mm-hmm. But if you say it out loud, and I mean, for me as a teacher, I had to give my notice as early as possible so that they could figure out a teacher for the following year. Like, I didn't want to leave them in the lurch. So I had to be upfront with some distance between. But one thing I can say just as an added caveat, while I was teaching full-time at the high school level, I also was able to start teaching online part-time with a community college. So for me, even though I left without a business really fully growing yet at all, I did have some basic bill income to pay coming in from my part-time online teaching. So I could do that from anywhere in the world. So that checked that box for me.
But also the skills, like teaching online.
Yeah. And, you know, that wasn't fulfilling my dream fully, because I wanted to start a business. But it was something that kind of helped me bridge that gap while I was building a business, while I was figuring stuff out, because it takes a long time, especially if you are brand new to it. There's a lot of things to unlearn from your past and relearn in a new framework as a business owner, as an entrepreneur. So I definitely had a lot to unlearn and to learn. So it was great that I had that buffer of part-time income coming in, just so that I, you know, could pay my basic bills and not be completely stressed out beyond the max. So I just wanted to add that as a caveat. I didn't just quit and just instantly was like a success with a business. It took many years, but I did have something on the side to kind of help me bridge that gap and give me space to do the learning and growing.
Yes. And I love that. There's so many stories out there that people do that, have a, like a side project, a side job, or they just like save a lot of money.
Yep. I did that too. I had squirreled away money as well. So I had that as like a backup. Like if a month was bad, like I had stuff I could pull from. So yeah, I definitely am a believer in have multiple backup systems so that you're not going to be on the street.
Homeless.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit more about going back to your business, Copy That Pops. What is the origin story?
So the first business that finally worked is a tutoring and test prep company. And, you know, we kind of were like all over the map. We're like, we'll tutor anybody. But we ended up figuring out over time that the biggest demand from the clients was for math, high school math tutoring, and also SAT prep tutoring. So all the subjects for preparing for the college entrance exam for the SATs. So as we learned that, we realized we really need to niche down what we offer and what we say we offer, because if we try to be everything to everyone, we'll be nothing to no one. So we learned that lesson to really niche down into the math, into the SAT prep. And that company is still going today, but my heart fell out of that world just because I had been in it for so long. And I got more and more interested in digital marketing and helping other entrepreneurs and not just helping students and their parents, which I love, but I just kind of grew out of that and into the helping entrepreneur space. So the first thing that I did transitioning away from the tutoring company was I have a friend who is the podcast host for this big marketing association. And he just did it part-time. He was like, hey, I'm super busy, but you're like a nerd for writing stuff. Will you listen to my shows? And before they go live, will you do the show notes for them and write social media tweets and create some images and help me promote and share, maybe write some blog articles inspired by the content? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I just started helping him on the side. And after a while of that, we realized that what we were doing together was a great business. He was doing the podcast audio editing and I was doing the content marketing afterwards. So I started a podcast production company that was like a transition between my tutoring company and what I'm doing now, and worked with many, many clients on their podcast even before I started my own. But then in 2016, I was like, okay, I want to start my own show and really start it from zero. And that's when I started my show, Copy That Pops. And I didn't know what I wanted to sell from that yet. So I started the podcast and it was a complete money drain.
Yeah.
I was not monetized. I'm sure you can relate. And, you know, mostly it was my own time, because the podcast hosting wasn't too expensive. It was like $10, $15 a month. And I don't feel like I had too many other expenses on that. It was just my own time and putting into editing it and doing all the content and stuff. But at the end of 2016, I was like, oh, I really want to grow this podcast production company and I want to figure out how I can monetize the Copy That Pops brand. And in the podcast, I was helping apply psychology and help people improve their writing for online marketing specifically, and, you know, being a digital entrepreneur. And so I decided, what is everyone who is an expert, what is something they all have in common? And I realized that they all had in common is that they were authors and they had published a book. And so I started doing research and I realized that self-publishing was a lot more robust and accessible than it ever had been before. And the taboo of it was going down. So it wasn't like looked down on anymore. And I was like, I could do this. So in 30 days, at the end of 2016, I decided to write, self-publish, and figure out how to hit number one in a category on Amazon. And I did it. So I did that in 30 days. So many people saw me do that and wanted help that in 2017, I finally figured out what I could do to really fully monetize Copy That Pops and what I could be known for even more specifically, because so many people were fascinated by the process of writing the book and self-publishing it and figuring out how to hit number one in your categories. So I ended up coaching people for free on that, recorded the videos, put it in a course, worked out the tutorials, a step-by-step so everyone could, you know exactly what to do, started taking on clients, and I started charging more and more and more. Every time someone said yes, I would raise the prices and charge more and improved my phone skills, because that's not something that I really love. I'm like a teacher. I'm not like a salesperson. So
yeah, nobody loves that, but it comes out natural. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now we're in 2018 as we record this, and that's now exclusively what I do. I don't have the podcast production company anymore, although my business partner in that is an amazing friend of mine. He just got really busy with his full-time job, so we let that go. And I'm just all in on books and helping people use the power of authorship and the excerpt sass that comes from that.
And it's lovely how you know, one thing came after another, another, and another. And even right now, you're branching out into being a speaker. You know, you already have first coaching, and then you had the courses. Mm-hmm. And then how do the other ideas come out? You know, is it something that just somebody asked you, and you're like, okay, I'm going to do that as well? Or how do you decide on that?
Yeah. I mean, over the time of being an entrepreneur, I realized that you will never know where you're going to end up exactly, because I fell in the trap for a long, long time of being a constant learner and consumer. So I would watch a webinar and be like, oh, that's what I need to do. And then I would listen to podcasts like, that's what I want to do. And then I'd read 5 blogs and be like, oh, I have a new plan. And I would just be all over the place chasing ideas and shiny object syndrome, as sometimes people say. Yeah. And so I realized that the first most important thing is you have to just take action. Taking the action forward, even if it's not in the quote perfect direction, is going to help you end up in the place that you ideally want to be faster than thinking about it, researching about it forever. So, you know, do a little bit of research, but give yourself a time frame. Let's say maybe like for 1 week, I'm going to research everything I need to know about X. And after that 1 week is over, it's time to start taking action. And when it comes to business, ideas do not matter until someone is willing to pay you for what you're able to give, whether that's a product or a service. So I personally, if I could redo everything, I would do a lot less time worrying about naming things, logos, websites looking perfect, and just start reaching out to my network and saying, hey, I'm going to offer this at this price. Do you want that? Do you know anyone who would? And just keep on asking until I got yes. And if I asked a ton of people and they said no, then I would say, go back to them, be like, what would you pay for? What do you need help with? And then figure out what the need actually is before I do all the other stuff on the side. Because if no one's going to pay you, then you don't actually have a business and you're just going to spin your wheels and get frustrated.
I love that. And more so when it comes to action, that, you know, there's so many of us are listening to podcasts or buying courses for 1 year, 2 years, and where is the action, right?
Yeah.
So I love that you actually put a deadline and then just do it. And when it comes to like branching out at like now as a speaker, what made you make that decision?
A few things, but one in particular, you're going to like this. So I've been feeling really mad at how stacked panels and conferences are in terms of them being like male. It's like 90% male, 95% guys, and one girl, or just so fewer women represented. And, you know, the same could go for ethnicity too, because there's a lot of like white people just filling the thing. And I'm Caucasian myself, but I still recognize it as like, come on, like it does not need to be all white dudes or like all white people. Like, let's mix up the perspective here. And for so many years, I told myself, I had the story in my head that I wasn't a good public speaker. Starting my own podcast has incredibly helped, because over the past years, I've done so many interviews that I've gotten far more comfortable in front of the microphone. And that's really helped me be able to kind of step forward onto stages. And I realized around speaking that I needed to be the change I wanted to see in the world, if that makes sense. It's like, I'm a female. So if I want to see more females speaking on stages, maybe I need to raise my hand and go put myself out there and do it instead of just wishing it were different. So that's the catalyst that really pushed me forward. And then the second thing was I kind of reframed stuff, and it really helped me inside my head, because I was like thinking, okay, if I get booked and I get to speak on a stage and Pat Flynn and Amy Porterfield and John Lee Dumas and Gary Vee, whoever, like all these like people I look up to, if they're also booked on the stage, and I haven't gotten that yet, but we'll see.
Yes, you will.
Yes, very soon. But, you know, if they're on the stage and I'm booked, my biggest fear was they were going to think that I was an imposter. They were going to think I was a fraud. They were going to think I wasn't good enough and I wasn't deserving to be there because I'm not as good as them yet. That was going in my head all the time. But I finally was like, okay, let me reframe this. my goal in life and my goal with my business is not to impress those people. That really doesn't actually matter. My number one goal is to help someone, someone's in the audience. And if I have the ability to communicate in a way, or because the fact that I am a female connects with someone in the audience in a different way, or if I have information or experiences that people connect with in a way, it's my job, it's my obligation to get up there and present and try to help anyone who would connect with me in the audience. That's the only goal. It doesn't matter if I flip on a word. It doesn't matter if I go blank for a second and have to regain my thoughts. It doesn't matter any of those things.
If you slip.
Yeah. And so once I kind of reframe that, the stress of it started to melt away. Now, I won't say that I still don't get like nerves before, but I'm choosing not to say that I'm nervous, that I'm just excited. Like, I'm just excited to get up there and share what I know and hope that it helps some people. So I think those two main things really helped me just let go of that old past limiting story and just decide to change it.
And it's so powerful what you're saying, that you change your mindset, because at first you're, I'm scared. And now you only think about excitement. Yeah. And so you trick your body and you're into, you know, instead of trembling, just being like, yay, but sort of dancing, instead of trembling, you're just excited about being there and having the opportunity to share your story, and you have value to add. So at least you're confident on that side, which is also important.
Yeah,
I love this. Let's go back to this one moment in particular when you had a huge struggle, and what did you learn from it? Like your biggest lesson. Let's not call it a failure, but...
I love the idea of saying you either win or you learn instead of you win or you lose, because everything is something to be learned from it.
I mean, it could be just like that moment when you felt, you know, like the worst, or that you lost faith over that product, that company, that service that you're not proud of, but you learned the most from it.
Well, I can't. One thing that does come to mind, which I kind of think is a little bit funny now, does specifically have to do with when I published my first book. So it's not company-wide of a lesson, but more of a book publishing lesson that was a bit embarrassing, but I definitely learned a lot. So when I published my first book, I did something called pre-order. And that just means that people are able to purchase it on Amazon, but they don't receive the file onto their Kindle until a future date that you can set. And so why I did that is because I did the entire thing in 30 days and I was like, oh my goodness, I really need like 2 more weeks to get this thing edited, but I can still make it live and officially hit my goal of it being available for purchase in 30 days, but then I can buy myself 2 more weeks before the file releases to everybody. So I did that. It was a success. I was excited. I did editing and formatting, but a gal that I had helping me with the formatting, because I couldn't get Microsoft Word to work right, long story short, she had her mother who was like on her deathbed. And so she was not able to turn around things as fast as I needed. And I didn't want to push her super hard, but I was already in so deep with her that I was like, I don't have time to change and find someone else. So with this pre-order, here's where the mistake and issue comes. You're required to upload your final file that's going to go out to everybody 3 full business days before the day that it's supposed to go out. So I basically had to do it by midnight on the 4th day before it was supposed to go out to everybody, right? But in working with this gal who I was working with, we didn't get the final file done until the next morning at 10 a.m. So I was like 10 hours late to upload my file. And I was like, oh, not the end of the world. I'll just push the release date 1 day. No one's going to care that it's just 1 day later. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when I logged into my account with Amazon, all edits were completely blocked. So that deadline of 3 days was hard and fast, which I did not realize. And so what ended up happening was I was not able to upload my real final file. Mm-hmm. So everybody who had purchased my book in advance, they were sent out a really, really bad early first draft that was terrible. Terrible. Like I had just uploaded it as a placeholder, really, because it was
gonna
so
see this.
Oh, it was so embarrassing. So what I ended up doing is I went up on a Facebook Live and I explained to everyone what happened. And I was like, it's totally my fault. I didn't read or understand the rules well enough. And here's what I learned from it. Here are their policies. Here's what to do. And people loved it. They were like, aww, thank you so much for sharing, you know, not just a selfie with a celebrity, but something real that you like learned a hard lesson. And people are like, no worries, we got your back. Don't worry about it. And so I ended up being able to work with Amazon and push through the updated file to everyone who had already gotten the bad one. I mean, that took like a week or something, but I still have like two or three really bad reviews on my first book from people that I think they purchased it, but they didn't know me. They purchased it, but just organically from Amazon. So they didn't know who I was, and they got the file, but never saw my Facebook Live and just like, what's up with this girl?
Yeah. It's like, oh, so what did I pay for?
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like that was a lesson. One, just own your mistakes. It's not really that big of a deal. I mean, I have like two or three bad reviews. My life is not over. And I commented to them and I was like, I'm so sorry. I think you might have gotten a wrong file. Let me know. And I'd love to send you, you know, a free copy in the mail, like a printed version or whatever. So I would just say, anytime you come up to something that doesn't go right or is a mess up, just own up to it and use it as a teaching lesson, not just to yourself, but even to your audience.
I love that. It's transparency, and you were being honest. You weren't just like, oh, too bad, goodbye. You know, you actually went, even like you would say face to face, but not really, but you were like showing your face to them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really powerful, and that's actually unique. Not everybody does that. That's good customer service.
Yeah. And just like, I think too, just don't take yourself or life so seriously. Like, yes, we all need to make money to survive. Yes, we want to appear like experts and have a good reputation, but these little things, we're all human. Nothing ever goes perfectly. So don't try to pretend like it does. Just laugh it off and learn from it.
Nothing is perfect. It's not going to be perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
As your path as an entrepreneur, do you have, if you can share with us, this moment that you are the most proud of?
Oh, that's a good question. And I have a hard time usually answering this question. I have my entire life. If people ask me like, what are you most proud of?
When it comes to business.
Yeah. I think that I'm most proud of not quitting.
I love that.
Yeah. Because there have been many a time. So, you know, I've been an entrepreneur now for, I think, 6 years, I would say, you know, since I left teaching full time. And I cannot even count the number of times when I have just cried in my bed and my husband's like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, I suck. This sucks. But I still didn't quit because I think that entrepreneurship is unlike anything else. Like, it's so unlike school, where I was good at school. Give me a syllabus. I know what to do. I'll check the boxes. I'll turn it in and I'll get an A. Yay. What's the next one? But entrepreneurship, it's so fluid and tests you in all different ways. And so many things are out of your control. And there's so much to learn and unlearn that it's definitely a roller coaster. I mean, there are times even within a same day that I'm like, I'm amazing. I've got this. And then like 2 hours later, something happens and I'm just like, I suck. I hate it. I just want to go to bed. So I think just not quitting is probably the best thing.
A complete roller coaster.
It is. It is. I still wouldn't change it for anything. Like, I love it, but it is the hardest thing I've ever done.
See, that's the funny part. It's like, I hate this. It sucks right now. But then you're like, but I really want to be in this state in my life. Like, it doesn't matter.
And I don't have kids yet, but I would imagine it's like that, where it's like kids can be like the hardest thing ever and you want to like scream and just like tear your hair out. And then on the other coin, it's like the most rewarding, fulfilling thing you've ever experienced too. So I feel like that's maybe an analogy.
Yeah, different type of baby.
Yeah, that's true.
Your baby, your business, and then a human baby. Now, speaking a little bit about your business, you've grown a lot. And when somebody's starting out, how would you attribute like networking or branding to the growth of a digital business?
Yeah, my first thought is networking, and not just like we kind of alluded to earlier in the show of just like, don't throw your business cards at everyone who passes by and think that that's going to get you business or grow. And so when you first meet someone, don't just be like, hey, do you want to buy this for me? Hey, do you know anyone who would buy this? Like, actually put in time to nurture relationships with people and they really will turn into a lot of things, but it does take time. So I love networking in particular. And I feel like if you go into networking, thinking of it as more of like a gardener rather than a hunter, I think that's the right mindset. It's like, you're going to plant a bunch of seeds, then you need to water it and sun has to hit it. And then there's a little bit of luck, you know, is there a bad winter and just destroys a bunch of stuff that you have no control over? Who knows? But some are going to sprout, some are not. Some are going to give fruit and some are not, but you can't predict which ones are. So just go in with that nurturing perspective of trying to give value and add to the relationship without wondering what you're going to get in return. Because I think people can just sense that anyway. And it's more fun. It's less pressure for you too. So you're not like going in like, I need to make $2,000 in sales by Friday from this event alone. Like, you're just going to be this nervous stress ball. So I think if you just see it as a long game that really can pay off in the long run, then I think that's the right mindset.
I love what you said. Gardener instead of hunter.
Yeah.
Did you just come up with that? It's amazing.
I did. Well,
wow. Yeah.
And I mean, I have to say too, like, on that note, sometimes I look at like Amy Porterfield and Pat Flynn and John Lee Dumas. They're big in the podcasting and online mm-hmm. entrepreneur space if people aren't familiar with them. But they all like shout each other out and feature each other on their shows and do all the stuff. And I'm like, dang, I wish I were in that club. But then what I realized is I have an opportunity, and I'm already growing it, to be in the next level club. So I've got other friends of mine who are at the same stage as I am, who are working just as hard, that are complementary to my business and podcast. And we shout each other out and we send each other referrals. And when we start putting on live events, we're going to have each other speak on each other's stages. So we can become our own group of it too. So I would say, look out for people who are just as hungry and hardworking and honest and, you know, aligned with you. Maybe have products and services that attract the same target audience, but aren't necessarily direct competitors, but are great complements. And keep really good in touch with them, even if you have like a weekly or a monthly online call, just to touch base, and or a text thread in your messages, just to keep helping each other out. And you'll be amazed at where that can grow to. In the beginning, it might not result in anything for like a year or something, but it really will. Like, I have a couple of groups that are just really starting to be incredibly valuable monetarily for me. And it really was just because I loved these people and we just kind of started talking, hanging out and passing each other stuff. But it's really like, as they grow bigger and I grow bigger, we all can help each other bigger in bigger ways.
I love this takeaway, because it's when you're talking about how to grow your business, you're saying mm-hmm. that you surround yourself with people so then you can grow together.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, and you don't have to necessarily only just go get selfies with all the biggest names in your industry. I would put more time and effort, if you're at a networking event or a conference, to find those people who are just like amazing puzzle piece type matches with you that mm-hmm. you can all grow together. I feel like that's valuable use of your time.
Oh, that's amazing. And well, let's change the tone a little bit because sure. we're almost out of time, but let's chat about continuous learning. So okay. first of all, we all learn from others. Mm-hmm. And could you share with the audience, if you right now have a mentor, a business coach, or someone mm-hmm. in business that you look up to and learn the most from, and why?
Oh, good question. I feel like in my entire life, I've never really used the word mentor. So that's another one of those questions that I always struggle with. And I don't officially have a business coach, although I have had in the past. So there have been times when I hired someone specifically for business coaching or marketing coaching or things like that. Right now, I currently do not. But I can say that from a distance, I don't know Gary Vaynerchuk personally yet, but I love his podcast and I play it almost every day. He says a lot of the same things over and over again, which I like because it just sticks it in my head. And it's not so much learning, because I feel like right now I'm in a very much of a zone of I just need to take action. So I'm trying to not consume a lot of courses and things, because that's just going to get me like chasing a rabbit down another hole. Mm-hmm. But what I love about his show is he's just like so encouraging of you to just like stop worrying about what everyone else thinks, have patience on a grander scale, but day to day, just really hustle and work hard and take action. So I just love hearing that over and over again. So in a way, from a distance, I kind of see his podcast as a bit of a mentor, or kind of like a daily motivating voice in my head that helps also keep negative self-talk out of my head, because we all tend to just like start going down a spiral. So I like to put him on, and then he's just like, get up and go, you know, and I'm like, okay.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah. I'm back at it. Thanks, Carrie.
Yeah. Like a reminder of the mindset that you had. And then, you know, once you see it going away and going into a bad alley, you're like, no.
For sure.
It's good play.
And I don't know about you or the listeners, but I know that I was, for me as being a nerd in school, I got a lot of validation constantly about, oh, you're so smart. You're so good. Look at all these things you did. It doesn't really happen in entrepreneurship as much. And there are even sometimes a lot of people who are listening to your podcast or reading your blog or buying your products and services, and they love it and they adore you, but they don't say anything. So you don't know. So sometimes it can be kind of quiet, and you can sometimes go down that spiral of just like, I'm not good enough, or no one cares, or nothing's working, but things are percolating, and you do have to have patience to know that it is working. Just trust and keep going forward.
Yes. And I have a really tough one for you now. What book do you recommend the most, and why? Oh, besides yours, of course.
That's an easier one.
Oh, good.
So the number one book I've given out and recommended ever is The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, for sure.
I love it. And why?
The first book that completely changed my life, which I'll add as a second book, is Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. Mm-hmm. So when I came back from Germany from studying abroad, my dad gave me that book, and that completely changed my perspective on the world. I had no idea. I was like, oh, I thought school was the only thing in the world, but oh, there's actually all this other stuff. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad is the book that has changed my life the most. But then The 4-Hour Workweek, when I opened it, I could not believe that someone had put words that were bouncing around in my head unformed into like the most perfect manifestation of exactly like what I thought and what I aspired to be. And I don't have a 4-Hour Workweek. I don't think I ever will. And I don't think that's necessarily his intention. It's a catchy title, but the principles inside of it, of really analyzing, what are you doing every day? Can you get rid of the stuff that's not working? Can you look at like 80-20? What things are creating 80% of your results? Okay, cut out the rest. The mindset of analyzing what you're doing and getting rid of the fluff and the stuff that doesn't work and doubling down on what does, I think is amazing. What can you automate? What can you delegate? So what can you get off of your plate so that you can focus on more important things in your business? So for most people, the most important things, in air quotes, is money producing activities. So if you can free up an hour a day with someone else editing your podcast, and that hour a day you can now do sales calls and make more money, then that's a fair trade, because you're going to be making a lot more on one end to more than pay for the help that you're getting on the other. So that is very core to that book. But he's also a huge international traveler, and he loves just trying new things. So he's like got his fingers in all different kinds of things, like jujitsu and
cooking
and like all this stuff. So like, he's just someone that I very much connect with. And I couldn't believe it when I read that book. So I just give it to everyone. I'm like, this is my Bible. Go ahead and read it if you want to understand me and have a recipe for how
success
to
and life pass. And be happy. And, and well, looking into the future now, Laura, what is next for Laptop Laura or your company? And are you currently cooking up a new project, or there's something coming up next?
Well, so funny. When I first started to try to be an entrepreneur back in my early 20s and nothing was working, I remember thinking, how does everyone just come up with ideas like for businesses or for projects? Like, I can't think of anything. And it was just killing me. And now that I've taken so much action and tried so many different things, I have unlimited ideas. So it's almost the opposite now. It's like, okay, Laura, you are not allowed to do anything else until, you know, the end of June when you have XYZ done or whatever. So
I'm right there with you.
Yeah. It's hard to focus now. But I definitely want to continue to do more speaking. If for no other reason, of course, it's going to help grow my own brand and business, but also to inspire more people, especially women, that we have a voice and we can step up and be heard. So that's a big part of what I want to do going forward. And well, I've never actually said this on a podcast, so you get to be first here. My husband and I are trying, so I want to make space for growing a family in the coming
future. That's lovely. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So hopefully that works out sooner than later. And so I'm also trying to get my own business and things more systematized and organized and outsource, you know, the things I don't have to be doing that someone else could do, just so I can make more space for kind of a work-life balance and have more time for family and kind of more relaxed things, not hunched over my laptop.
Yes, I agree with you. Talking about family, could you just tell us a little bit about your sidekick?
Tuck, yes. He's probably going to come running back over here. He is about 10-pound Min Pin Chihuahua mix. And we got him when he was 2 from a rescue shelter in Arizona. And now he's about 7. So we've had him for about 5 years. And my husband and I actually took a year and lived in Europe. So I worked remotely in Europe with my husband. So I've lived in Europe twice for a year separately, one in college and then one with my husband. And we took Tuck with us. So he is an international dog of mystery. I think he's been to like 7 countries or something. So he's a good traveler.
I love that you use him in social media. Adorable.
Yes. Yeah. If you follow me, especially like on Instagram and even Facebook, you can see a lot of Tuck pictures.
Wonderful Tuck. And before we go, just one last question. For all of those who want to launch their business, what would you say to them?
Well, in addition to what we've been talking about, one thing that does come to mind is you really are, like, I love the saying, you're the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. And it maybe it's not 5, maybe it's 3, 7, 10. But what we surround ourselves with, like, we humans, our psychology is, we're such social creatures that we do impact and influence each other more than we even realize. And so my best advice is, if you want to start a business, if you want to grow a business, then you need to surround yourself with people who are starting and growing businesses. And they can be at your level. They can be even, you know, a couple steps behind. That's fine, because there's things that you can teach them and you actually learn and do better by teaching others. But if you want to be a business, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you need to surround yourself with them as much as possible, because people who are not willing to take that leap, they think differently, they speak differently, they act differently, and it's going to discourage you and slow you down. So I'm not saying, you know, never speak to those people again, but do as much as you can to really surround yourself with the people that you can grow and learn with. It's going to make such a difference.
I love that. And you're always like in meetups and networking, and I've seen you here in San Diego in a lot of entrepreneur meetups.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and if there isn't something by you, start one or go online. So when I was living in Europe with my husband, there were no entrepreneurs that I knew of in the little city we were living in. And so I got super active in Facebook groups and all over the place. And I made amazing connections and friends. So, you know, there's no excuse. Doesn't matter where you are, even if you're in like a small town or whatever, just you can make connections online and you can even start your own thing. So that's something else I started that you might be alluding to, is I started every other Friday here in San Diego. I'm now doing a coffee connection meetup group for entrepreneurs, and there's no agenda. There's no cost other than, hey, buy some coffee at the store, you know, so that the shop feels like we're supporting them. But we just come, and for 2 hours, we just talk and get to know each other. And we eventually do share what we do for business, but the main point of it is just to all connect. And people are loving that. And I am loving the benefits of being seen as the leader of that. So that's another little hack, is if you don't have something by you, start something, and your status is going to be raised by being the leader of it too.
Of course. Before we go, can you share with our audience the best way they can find you, all your socials and sites?
So the main site is copythatpops.com. So you can go there and it'll link you out to a billion other things. And then with social media, I'm Laptop Laura on most of them. So you could start there.
Yes. And I will add this on the show notes and on the website. And Laura, thank you so much for being here. Your story is very, very inspiring, and I'm sure listeners will take away a lot of knowledge. But mostly, we hope that they take action.
Yes, right? Yeah, take action and then tweet us or message us on Instagram or Facebook and let us both know what you've done.
Yes, please, very much so. And you can follow the show at Fent Show on Instagram, Twitter, and also Facebook. But our main website is fentmedia.co, and the Spanish version is Fent Podcast. But thank you again. Thank you, Laura, so much. This was really wonderful. And I hope we can chat again in the future.
Absolutely. See you around San Diego.
See you around. Thank you, everybody who is listening, and I'll see you on the next episode. Ciao.